You're listening to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of LA Magazine. Here are your hosts, Brian and Gina.
Hello, and welcome to The Brian and Gina Show, the official podcast of Los Angeles Magazine. I'm Brian Bishop.
I'm Gina Grad.
Very interesting guest today, Gina. He is a gatekeeper to a world I hope to never be a part of, but it's still fascinating, and we certainly know plenty of people who have. Yeah. And James Sexton is going to reveal a lot of the secrets, how to avoid secrets of the world of family law and divorce specifically.
Yeah, he's a New York divorce lawyer, but he has this book with the greatest title of
all
time.
It really is a great title.
It's so good. It's If You're in My Office, It's Already Too Late, A Divorce Lawyer's Guide to Staying Together. So you'd think like, well, you're a divorce lawyer. Like, what do you know about relationships? Oh, I don't know everything, because you're seeing it when they have decided to wave the flag and say it's no longer, it's irreparable.
It's gone
too far.
And now
we need you. Yeah. So it's so funny, because you think of a therapist is there to like bolster you up and think of the positives, but the lawyer is doing the same, but from the absolute other side. He has all the avoidables, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by every aspect of this, especially you know, I've seen this guy on various TV shows, and he's acting almost as the aforementioned marriage counselor.
Yeah.
You know, when he's like, hey, here's how you fix it. Here's how you avoid coming to see a guy like me.
Yeah, and why shouldn't he? I mean, he's obviously smart enough to know, like, I'm sorry, but there's not going to be a shortage of divorces. So even if he's known as the guy who prevents you from getting the divorce, unfortunately, there's a line of people right behind them.
I don't doubt he'll never go hungry.
As you know, my husband was married before and went through a divorce, and my parents are divorced, and I know lots of people who've gone through it, and it is taxing. It's taxing emotionally and mentally and financially.
No kidding.
And there are questions that, like, we've dealt with, you know, lawyers and stuff, or, you know, through his divorce lawyer, whatever. And there are questions that just aren't really appropriate to ask them when they're representing you, but you're dying to know. Those are questions I'm going to ask James, because I want to know.
There's many layers to this onion. I'm very curious about if he has perspective on like some celebrity divorces that we've seen in the news. You know, obviously Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, very, very, very prominent and famous, dragged out in the public eye. Like, how common is everything that went down in that trial? I'm interested in prenuptial agreements, how common those are.
I imagine it's too late for that, Brian.
Imagine, not for me. I imagine more prominent than we probably suspect.
That, and also, isn't there one called, and he's going to have to correct me because I'm just thinking of this on the spot. Isn't there one called like a sunset agreement or a sunset clause? They're like, you can do the prenup after you're already married.
Oh, you can do a contract whenever you want, I suppose. Probably
that's
advantageous
probably
to do.
I should probably let Christy know.
Yeah, that's too late.
Lovely wife. Okay. Yeah. So there's all kinds of things, but that's the funny thing about him is curious as we are about the divorce aspect, and I'm sure he'll be able to answer everything. He also has seen so many couples consciously uncouple, or whatever the hell Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin called it back in the day, that like, he also knows relationships, and I'm very curious as to how he sees things as opposed to how, you know, Dr. Laura or somebody on the radio sees things.
That's interesting. Also, how many versions of divorce exist now? Like, back in, you know, the old days, it was you stayed married, you got divorced, and that was it. Now it's like, oh, there's a separation, there's, you know, living arrangements, there's all sorts of legal entanglements I'm sure you can get yourself wrapped up in if you want to avoid divorce.
That's a great point, because you think like, oh, we got divorced. We decided to get divorced, and 3 weeks later we were divorced. But like, I don't remember, because I was 11 or 12 when my parents got divorced, but there's, you know, dad moves to some crappy apartment building 15 minutes away, and you do it was a little different in our situation, as I remember. There was no custody, like the kids will stay in the house, come by whenever you want.
Okay.
There wasn't like a custody agreement. Like, come by all means, if you think the lawn's looking shabby, come mow it. Like, do whatever. Yeah. Come in, you have a key.
So he was Steve Carell in Crazy Stupid Love.
I forgot about that movie.
Remember, he's mowing the lawn at night, or he was like aerating. Right. He was like working on the sprinklers.
That's right. I hardly remember that movie because it was crazy, stupid, long. But
it was, you know what? It went on a little too long. But that said, still a very good movie.
Yeah, yeah. So we all know, you know, Dad usually gets a bachelor efficiency down the street and does, you know, the nights and weekend or whatever. But I'm curious as to what the most common arrangement is, because like you said, sometimes everybody gets another condo or apartment and then they come back to the house, or sometimes mom goes,
right,
which is not as common.
Yeah.
And dad stays.
Yes. Back in the day, like we said, you know, mom got the kids and dad got the bachelor pad. And I'm wondering what the percentages are these days.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw the headline, you know, because this is pretty new, but Kevin Costner's wife wants out.
I saw this.
Yeah.
Oh, sad. Done.
That's one of those guys that you just think, like, he's in it for the long haul. Or at least he thinks he's in it for the long haul.
I'm that eternal optimist who, when you might not know this about me, Gina, but when I go to see a movie, no matter what it is, I want it to be great. Like, I'm like, I hope this movie turns out like my Lego movie experience, where I didn't expect much. And I was like, wow, that was amazing.
Totally.
I want every marriage to go the distance. You know, I realize that's not realistic, but you know, I'm rooting for everybody except my enemies.
I get that. And I applaud it and I appreciate it. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I agree. And I'm usually shocked, but I get it when it's a hair band or when it's, you know, like some bombastic like YouTuber.
Sure.
But America's Father, Kevin Costner.
Yeah, this is not some young starlet or rock star in their 20s who's on a starter marriage, you know.
I don't want to know this.
I want him to ride off into the sunset, you know, with the wife.
You know, I think that's really it. I think that out of all the turbulation and turmoil and problems that we have day in and day out, what really keeps me up at night is Kevin Costner okay?
Well, thankfully, you probably were sleeping well until just a couple nights ago.
That's true. But, you know, even when, you know, sometimes divorce is inevitable. Sometimes you're like Brian and, you know, Christy's stuck.
Yeah, I know. At this point, I've really got her pinned into a corner.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure, you know, knock wood, that Andy and I are done looking for the time
being.
There you go. For this lifetime. But that doesn't mean that even if you have a mother-in-law and maybe you are no longer married to her son, doesn't mean she doesn't deserve a nice gift on Mother's Day.
Nice.
Just something to think about. Doesn't necessarily mean you divorce the whole family. That's another subject I want to get into, by the way. But I just want to give a quick plug and mention to our lovely sponsor, who I really do love. And they say that there are more moments in life that transform you and that shape you and who you are and who you want to be. And there are people who inspire you, who motivate you to go further than you ever dreamed. And sometimes a place or a point in time that it'll define the very essence of who you are. That is where Alex and Ani comes in. They create meaningful jewelry that honors your spirit, tells your story. And for Mother's Day, I mean, come on, a mother. Their collection is perfect. It honors that unstoppable force and strength of a mother's love. Motherhood, undeniably a full-time job. And through the endless days and sleepless nights, moms transform into superheroes, guided by the deepest and purest strength of all, of course, that's love. And at Mother's Day, Alex and Ani celebrates the super moms in your life. They honor her with these beautiful pieces. So definitely go to alexandani.com and grab something for the wife, grab something for the mom, grab something for the mother-in-law, even if you're divorced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because there's a good chance, in my experience, that they don't just disappear. You know, they still... They're like you and Kevin Costner and his wife. They're still holding out hope.
They're around.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can't wait to talk to this guy. Should we just get ready to do it?
Yeah, let's bring him in the studio.
Perfect.
James Sexton next. All right, we're back. Let's welcome James Sexton into the studio. James, how are you, my friend?
I am great. Thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Of course, we were having some very intellectual law talk vis-a-vis Billy Joel off the air.
Yeah, you know, I just had to when presented with, before I even said hello, I just had to launch into Gina about the fact that I can't believe she exposed her son to Billy Joel by playing Uptown Girl. That just felt like someone had to say that that is not representative of his catalog. And I was saying that I feel like that's like saying, oh, here's Bruce Springsteen, let me play you the Ghost of Tom Joad. Like, you don't, you start with Thunder Road, Born to Run, Born in the USA, that kind of thing. So that's all. I just had to defend Billy Joel's honor as a New Yorker.
Mr. Saxton Esquire, if I may.
Okay.
Obviously.
Proceed, counsel.
Obviously, you start with Thunder Road. I'm not a maniac.
Okay, right.
Okay, so let's get that straight. First of all, this child knows nothing of music. He listens to, you know, whatever it comes on during his Nintendo Switch with Super Mario. And okay. One summer he was really into Call Me Maybe. So I thought, what's a good bridge to this pop bubblegum bullshit doo-wop music? He got into The Longest Time. He likes his Uptown Girl. He likes to dance around with a flourish. Okay. I was trying to be a good mother, but James, you're really giving me a lot to think about.
I'm not indicting you as a mother. I mean, I spend a lot of time indicting people as parents. This is part of being a custody lawyer. And I don't think this is something admissible against you in a court of law. Isn't it a fact, ma'am, that you played for him Uptown Girl? You know, and the judge.
So like, we agree.
The mark for identification, the Downeaster Alexa and Goodnight Saigon, both of which are excellent choices. And instead, she's decided Billy Joel is a doo-wop artist. She's going to play Sha Na Na for him next. I mean, I just felt like I don't want to go too far, but I just felt.
I get it. He also likes Huey Lewis. Anyway, moving on because I'm getting myself into hot water.
I know I came in guns hot. I apologize.
I can weigh in here, maybe you wouldn't expect this. I can go pretty deep on Billy Joel with you, James. Yeah. I saw Billy Joel. My first concert was front row at the Oakland Coliseum because, you know, Billy has this thing where he has like his guys go out in the crowd before the show and look for like hot young girls. Well, I was 12 years old and I'm probably pretty pathetic looking. And my mom, mouthy broad that she is, was like, hey, how about you give my son front row tickets? Front row, first concert ever at the Oakland College, the Stormfront Tour. This is incredible. So I got a soft spot for Billy Joel.
You got nowhere to go but down from
there. Yeah. That was my greatest concert experience.
I took my sons when they were quite young. I took them to Madison Square Garden to see Slipknot.
Oh, wow.
And it was all, you know, and explosions. And I said to them, guys, this is not how a concert usually is. Like, because I feel like if they then went to see Mumford and Sons, they were going to fall asleep.
They would start crying. It's the same. We took his first Dodger game. We got a suite. That's a one and done. Yeah. That's a one and done.
So if I'm away
with children, it's like, you know, we don't know who discovered water, but it wasn't a fish. Like, if so, if you're in the thing and you just go, everyone flies private. You're like, no, they don't. Like, they don't. And you have to realize this is like why you study. Like, this is why.
Exactly. Exactly.
But if I could weigh in, I don't know if you know, Gina's stepson is 7 years old. He's seven, right?
Seven.
So I do feel at that age, having a six-year-old myself, Uptown Girl. And by the way, Innocent Man is actually my favorite Billy Joel album. I like a lot of them. That happens to be my favorite one. That's a good bridge to get them in. Like, you're not going to win them over with Vienna. You know what I mean?
And I don't think like Summer Highland Falls, like, like unless they're bipolar, is not going to really do it for them.
Not going to land.
I wouldn't go deep cuts with them, but I just feel like Uptown, like I know people that like Billy Joel that don't like Uptown Girl.
Because I thought that was every Billy Joel fan.
It's a very specific genre, you know, like Huey Lewis in the News, you mentioned, like, you know, there's big even fan. Hall & Oates. There's some Hall & Oates that's very doo-wop, you know, so if they're not going to be into doo-wop, then it might not be the play. But anyway.
James, I'm going to plead guilty just because you're so convincing and charming.
I have to try, you know, I do my best. I try to be so persuasive throughout the day here. So
I'll wrap up my Billy Joel thoughts by saying, fun fact, I don't know if you know this, Gina, I don't think I ever said it on our old show, but for years until, you know, to this day, my Goodnight Lullaby for Tessa is Piano Man by Billy Joel. I've sung that to her for years.
You sing it?
I sing it.
Oh, look at you.
I don't sing it well.
Better choice than Goodnight My Angel because that song's about death. So, he actually wrote it as a lullaby for his child when his child said to him, you know, what happens when you die, you know, and he wrote that song for her, which is, I still think, a great song. Actually, Billy Joel is surprisingly a great segue into me because he's been divorced so many times.
That's true.
Also, James, you talk about death, and I know that this is mostly an audible, you know, and less of a visual medium, but Brian, am I hallucinating or do I see half a skull on James' desk?
You do. Yeah,
you do.
That's someone's ex-husband. I have that there.
Rehearsing for Hamlet.
And the brass knuckles and those are all gifts from clients. But I feel like every now and then I pick it up and sort of do like an alas, poor Yurik. I knew him well.
Yeah, that's a very intimidating office, but with some beautiful flora.
And the flora actually has a funny story that my mother passed away about 7 years ago after a long battle with cancer. I never had a green thumb. She was a tremendous plant person. And she, when she passed, I helped sort of clean out the house and there was all these plants. And I thought, well, I guess I should take some of the plants. But I didn't realize plants have babies. So what happened is I took four plants. And then those four plants would grow and drop off offshoots that if you put them in soil, like grow into another plant.
Sure.
Well, if you saw this office, it's like Little Shop of Horrors in and out. I can't allow any of these baby plants to pass because somehow my mother's like spirit lives on in them.
Yeah.
So if you know anybody who needs some plants, I am running out of space for plants everywhere. They are literally, I walk into the office to begin doing divorces and I hear like, feed me Seymour coming from the corner. It's really... It's a lot, but it makes it vibrant, which is nice.
They're beautiful. We have a lot of listener questions to get to, but I have some personal, and Brian might too, some like nitty-gritty lawyer questions that I told Brian when, you know, dealing with divorce lawyers for other people. I always had questions that I felt were way too inappropriate to ask the person we were paying.
I love that.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about divorce, though, is as a divorce lawyer, you know, getting married is the most legally significant thing you'll probably ever do other than dying.
Sure.
And when you buy a house, you get like a HUD-1 disclosure and a lead paint disclosure and a thing that explains how the loan works, all these disclosures. You get married, you didn't get a pamphlet. You get nothing.
Nothing.
You literally have no idea. Most people, the first time they learn anything about the massive changes that happen to their rights and obligations when they got married is when they come to my office, which is, by the way, way too late to find that out.
Yeah.
You know, and so that is a really fascinating thing. I've always felt like everyone should have a behind closed doors attorney-client privilege conversation with a divorce lawyer before they get married, one hour, and just learn what is about to happen to your legal rights and obligations for the rest, because all marriages end. They end in death or divorce, but they all end. So if they end in death, we know, like, right, we get life insurance, we think about all those things. But divorce, most people just have no idea whatsoever. And the first time they hear any of this is when they come to my office. So
that's right.
I'm thrilled whenever anybody says, God, I want to ask you a question. I know what you do for a living. I'm always like, bring it. Like, that's what I'm here to do.
This is like a major public service that just to have you on. So this is fantastic.
I have a lot of bad karma to make up for. So that's good.
Then this is where you start pro bono.
Oh, cleanse your soul.
Love it.
So I'm really curious because I've heard some horror stories and I've seen some crazy things. Has anyone ever walked into your office that was so certifiably insane, morally, you said, I can't do this. I can't take you on.
I would say that happens at least once a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that happens.
What precipitates
it's not that? It's not that I couldn't take it because they're morally reprehensible or something like that. It's just the sense of, oh, wow, this person's just like their motivation is bad and I am not going to get involved in this. Because you learn, I've been doing this for over 20 years and it's all I've ever done is matrimonial and family law. And I have to tell you, like, I can sniff out crazy now. My crazy, you know, radar is unbelievably good. And even if you're like, there was a time where early in my career, like if you were rich and crazy, I could deal with it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
All right, it's great. You know, listen, for $750 an hour, I'll mow your lawn. I don't care. But then I got to a point where I went, yeah, no, because there's enough people that want my services that I go, I don't have to deal with crazy anymore. I'm not dealing with crazy anymore. So, but yeah, I mean, there are people who come in and they identify, you can spot it pretty easily. But what I will say is nobody ever comes in, sits in the chair across from me and says, I want this divorce to be ugly and expensive and terrible and protracted. And I want to use it to extract revenge for everything this person ever did wrong. And every time they left the toilet seat up, they come in and they all say the same thing. I want to be fair. I want to be fair. Right. Yeah. But their definition of fair and their spouse's definition of fair are so completely different that we're off to the races. So there, I always take that time in the consult to like dig a little deeper about what do you mean by that and what is your goals? And you get to a place where you can start to spot crazy a mile away.
Wow. That is so well. And our buddy, Mark Garagos, who has a vested interest in the show doing well, by the way, has said to us in the past, if both parties are unhappy, you know, you've hit the sweet spot.
Every settlement, if anybody walks out feeling like they won, someone didn't do their job well. Like everybody should walk out sort of a little bit despondent. But, you know, Garagos, obviously, like, you know, he's every lawyer's sort of like, you know, idol in some way. And he was mine coming up, certainly, because there's a breed of trial lawyer that you just, it's like a whole different universe. And that's what I wanted to be, because, you know, lawyers are all about, you know, posturing and performing. Right. But they hear those five magic words, please call your first witness. And most people freeze. And when you have lawyers who actually know how to throw hands like he does in a courtroom, you don't have to get in that many fights because people know you know how to fight. Uh-huh. So he's not the big guy at the bar who's standing there going, you know, like, I'm going to take you out back. He's the guy at the bar that when that loudmouth guy is like, I'll see you in court. He's like, okay, I guess the judge is going to earn their money today. But the thing Garagos knows, and then any criminal lawyer knows, is that when you do criminal law, you see bad people at their best. When you do divorce law, you see good people at their worst.
Well said.
And it's a totally different animal because you're dealing with people. Like I have clients who are quant people in finance. They're brilliant. They're smarter than I'll ever be. They know what to do with graph paper other than like drawing pictures on it like I would. Like I've had surgeons at Sloan Kettering I represented, people that are just so brilliant. And they turn into vindictive 13-year-olds with no prefrontal cortex, no sense of consequences. And they just are petty and spiteful. And you have to explain to them and talk to them like a child, like you protect them from themselves and their own, you know, anger at the demise of their relationship. And that's the hardest part of matrimonial law, is the client management piece of it.
Well, you become like a de facto therapist.
100%. I joke because I have a bachelor's degree in psychology and then I have my law degree. And I always said I actually use the bachelor's degree in psychology more than I use the degree in law.
I would guess, but you tell me, you've got to be in favor of prenuptial agreements, right? Because that just lays everything out.
As an advocate, absolutely. From a business standpoint, if everybody got prenups, guys like me'd be out of business. But I do personally believe everybody should have prenups. I think it makes sense. I mean, there's a chapter in my book where I talk about the fact that just the simplest prenup that says, if it's in my name, it's mine. If it's in your name, it's yours. If it's in our joint names, we split it 50-50, could save everybody so much headache and so much money. They'd put their kids through college instead of mine. And that would be way better. Because the truth is, you know, it forces you to have an ongoing discussion then where you got this bonus in. Okay, are you putting it in that account in your name? And if so, why? Do you not want me to share in that? Or are we putting part of it in the joint account so that we both share in it in the event anything split up? But people don't want to do that. I've actually had people say to me with a straight face, oh, we don't use the D word in our house. We don't discuss divorce in my house. And I think to myself, that is as stupid as saying, I don't use the word drugs in my house. So none of my kids will ever be tempted to use drugs. Like, okay, all that is a stick in your head in the sand. 53% of marriages end in divorce. So let's break that down. 53% end in divorce. What percent stay together for the kids or because they don't feel like giving away half their stuff? Let's be conservative. 10%? Maybe 15%? Yeah. Okay. Now you have a technology fails 63% of the time. Mm-hmm. If I told you there's a 63% chance, Brian, when you walk out of the studio today, you're going to get hit in the head with a bowling ball, you'd stay inside or you'd walk out with a helmet on. There's absolutely no way you'd go, 63, that's not so bad. Toyota had a car many years ago that had like 0.0001 of the cars had a brake failure.
Yes.
They recalled all of them.
All of them.
They said, we cannot take that risk. 63%. So why wouldn't you have a prenuptial agreement? It's absolutely preposterous not to have a prenuptial agreement. But again, most people, they see it as a sign of, you know, it's not romantic.
Failure, right.
You know, it's not faith in the marriage.
Or they're, Yeah, or they're planting the seeds for failure.
Sure.
Before it even starts.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
Sure. But, and they don't want to have those conversations, you know? I mean, the hard thing to do and the right thing to do in a marriage are very often the same thing. And it's a lot harder to constantly check in and talk to each other about, hey, you know, how's this going? What's going on with this? Like, we're at a job. We have a performance review, right? We have some way to check in. How am I doing? You know? So one of the pieces of advice I always give to people in relationship is, you know, look, why don't you check in with your partner? Why don't you have a space or a time or a walk and talk where you can just sort of go, hey, you know what? Let's talk about what we did right this week as a couple, like things that you did that made me feel good, things that made me feel closer to you, and some things that maybe we could do better next time, and learn from that and try to not be defensive about it. Again, these are the kinds of things that I think would keep people out of my office.
You certainly have a refreshing perspective as a divorce and custody lawyer. My God. Yeah. I'm wondering if you've ever seen this, and I'm only asking because it's you. It's you, James, who seems to get it in a bigger way. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a couple undivorce during the proceedings and say, you know what? We might want to give... really?
Oh, yeah, it actually happens quite often. It not only happens quite often, I've had people who finalized the divorce, a brutal divorce. I just had this happen to me, actually, where I did a divorce for a guy about 12 years ago. One of the ugliest divorces I've ever done, and that's saying a lot. And this was brutal. It was horrible litigation, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I did a good job. I got him custody of his two daughters. But this was brutal litigation. I cross-examined this one for 2 days. It really just was an ugly, ugly case. And I stayed in touch with the guy a little bit over the years. And I found out his mom passed away a few months ago. And I said, you know what? I went a lot of miles with this guy as his lawyer. And we had years and years of litigation where I represented him. Let me stop and pay my respects at the wake at the funeral home. And I walk in and he greets me and he's touched that I'm there. We give each other a hug. And I said, hey, how you been? You doing okay? And, you know, I said, are you in a relationship again? And he goes, actually, yes, we got back together. And I said, wait, you got back together with your ex? And he says, yeah. And she's here, you know. So I walk over because now she's like
there. And a dust cloud was where James used to be.
Right. And I'm standing there. Where I felt like it should be like the Roadrunner, like shooting out the door. But I walk and I see his two kids that are not kids anymore. It's 12 years later. They're young women now. And I see her and I think, oh, this is going to go one of two ways. You know, she's either going to just punch me, which that's okay. Or she's just going to, you know. And she actually like gave me a hug and she said, oh, you know, it's good to see you. And she said, it's funny how things work out. And I was like, you have no idea how funny. Yes, it's very funny. So it happens. God. I had a couple once that we finalized their separation agreement. They were in my conference room and they were both very emotional about it. And they said, you know, can we have the room for a few minutes? And I thought, okay, maybe they want to just have like a last sort of, hey, we'll always have Paris and like kind of be kind to each other.
Right.
And we left them alone. Opposing counsel and I came into my office just to kill a few minutes. My assistant walks in and she goes, I think they're having sex. And I said, no, they signed their divorce papers. They're just having like a, you know, stay gold pony boy, hug it out moment. They're fine. And she goes, no, I think they're having sex. She's like, I know what it sounds like when people are having sex and I think they're having sex. And so I was like, God, they're not having sex. And I walk up to the conference room. I stick my ear to the door. I'm like, okay, they're definitely having sex.
Wow.
And about 15, 20 minutes later, which again, I don't know if they were snuggling after or it's just the staying power. And they came out both kind of put together, you know, they looked fine and they kind of went on their separate ways. And I thought, well, maybe it's like one last tour of the battlefield, you know.
So.
Yeah.
My God. James, before we go any further, we do want it in writing notarized that this isn't the last we see of you because there is so much more to this.
I am not retiring anytime
good,
soon.
Good,
it's
good, good.
It's always a pleasure to be here. And next time I'm going to bring a list of Billy Joel songs.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. I didn't want to imply that we were done. I just wanted to get that in writing before we keep going.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's okay. I'm a notary, so I can stamp that. We're good.
Thank you. Brian, you think we should ask him some of these listener questions?
I do, but I also have a follow-up question to what we were just talking about, so it's timely. When the couple gets back together or calls the divorce off or whatever it is, my hunch, but you tell me from your observations, how often is it that something changed materially, like someone got sober or you know what I mean? Or someone got therapy for like an anger management. Like there's something, some roadblock fell.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what happens, it varies, right? So sometimes I think, you know, the old, we don't know what we've got till it's gone.
Right.
Sometimes people just have never really said to each other the things they needed to say. And when they pay me to talk for them and they hear what their spouse has to say about them, it's sometimes the thing that makes them look at themselves and say, wow, I didn't realize I was doing that. Or I didn't realize that it hurt you so badly. And that sometimes is what happens. Sometimes two people envision what their life post-divorce is going to look like. And then they get a taste of it during the proceedings where they physically separate. They're seeing their children, you know, part of the time. And they start to realize that, you know, the grass isn't necessarily greener on the other side of the fence. I tell people all the time, if you're married, you have one set of problems and you don't have another set of problems.
Right.
If you're single, you have one set of problems and you don't have another set of problems. So there's no perfect way to live your life. It's like, what set of problems do you want to have? And so I think sometimes people don't know until the theory becomes a reality what's really going on. But you mentioned the sobriety thing, and I will say, because this is in all of my work, there's tons of substance abuse issues is a huge piece of marital discord. But after COVID, you know, post-COVID, in terms of after the lockdowns and everything changed, I'm not a substance abuse counselor, but I have to tell you, from where I'm sitting, people's substance abuse must have gone through the roof because I am getting more substance abuse related cases I'm hearing at least 5 times a week from clients when they're coming in for consults. I'm getting the, we always drank, but then when the pandemic hit, it went through the roof. He always, you know, smoked pot or he always, but then when the pandemic hit, it went through the roof. So I do think when people find sobriety, that is always a significant life change for people.
True.
And that can be a fundamental change, you know? So I do think that sometimes we change individually in the things we go through and that changes the dynamic. I always tell people when you have extreme problems in your marriage, it's either the beginning of the end or the end of the beginning. And that happens with infidelity. You know, we don't talk about it as a culture. It's like, oh, he cheated. Oh, get him out of there. He's the worst person. Right. Oh, she cheated. Oh, forget it. The relationship's over. You'd be shocked how many people, you know, I'm sure, have had problems in their marriage involving emotional, you know, affairs or even physical affairs. And they find a way to work through it. They find a way to look, I'm not throwing this whole thing out. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to learn about my partner, what their needs are, how to earn back their trust, how to learn how to trust them again. And there's a lot of people that come in because they just discovered that their spouse was cheating. 99% of the time, it's because they don't realize that their iMessage is also on their iPad.
Oh, boy.
The iPad, and all of a sudden, the iMessage that was supposed to come up on their phone comes up on the iPad. Yep. And you go, what did like Tim Cook and Steve Jobs like work together and figure out how to destroy marriage? Because this is like the most brilliant technology ever for this. And, you know, their first move is, I'm seeing a divorce lawyer tomorrow, and they're in my office. But a week or two later, they start to go, all right, maybe we should talk about this, you know? So there can be a lot of things that shift that trajectory in the wrong direction. And there can be a lot of things that shift it back in the right direction.
Sorry, now that we're doing this, I have one more question.
No, please.
One of my very favorite show ever, The Sopranos, which I've seen 37 times, easily 37 times. Something that we joke about in our house, is how when Tony and Carmela are thinking of getting away from each other, I think you know where this is going.
You go to every single divorce lawyer that knows what they're doing so that you can preclude them from doing it. We actually call it the Sopranos tactic. We call it the Soprano tactic. Yeah.
So basically, Brian, they go around, he meets with all the top divorce lawyers to poison the well so they can't represent her. Is that a real thing?
It is a real thing. It is a real thing. It's why almost every credible divorce lawyer charges a consultation fee. Because if you gave a free consult, you open yourself up to that because there's no downside to going to every lawyer. Now you have to think, does someone, are you willing to pay $500 to not have me on the other side of a case? There's quite a few people who've done it. Like I've had people who come in and I've even had people who come in And they do the consult with me. And at the end of it, they go, you know, I came in just to get rid of you so that she couldn't hire you because I had somebody else, but I'm hiring you. I like you and I'm hiring you instead. So sometimes it backfires on the person, I guess.
Wow.
But yes, it is something that happens. And there's no way around it because there are some lawyers who have this thing on their intake sheet that says this does not create attorney-client relationship and therefore I could be hired by your spouse. I think that's garbage. You to do a consult effectively, I got to find out a lot about what's going on in your life and your finances. And you're not telling me that not subject to attorney-client privilege. Right. You're telling me because I'm a lawyer. So, you know, look, if people want to do it, they have the ability to do it and bump people off of cases. But that's a real thing. And that was going on before The Sopranos. It's been going on for years.
But none of us had ever heard of it before.
Well, I feel like we kind of have to thank The Sopranos. Yeah. And David Chase did a great job of telling everybody about that because now everybody wants to do it. And you say, because sometimes people call and they say, well, do I have to pay the consult fee? And I go, you ever watch The Sopranos? And they go, oh, okay.
Sure, got it. Well, hold on. Let me just back up a step now that we're half an hour in. I want to ask, I'm sure you've been asked a version of this 1,000 times. You wrote the book, but I want to know for our listeners, what maybe are the top 2 or 3 things that cause people to be in your office talking to you? Why do they end up there? And what are the things people can do to never end up in your office or an office like yours?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I wrote an entire book on that. But I would say that the problem with so the answer most people want me to say, and it's true, is adultery, financial impropriety, substance abuse. Those are the 3 big ones.
Okay.
But to me, that's like saying, why do most people die? Well, they die because their heart stops beating. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you're mixing up the symptom, right? And the underlying cause.
Right.
So a lot of what I talk about in my book and in my work is that, you know, the reasons why people engage in those behaviors like adultery or infidelity, why they engage in financial impropriety, why they don't, are much more deeply rooted than that. Like no one gets married with the intention of getting divorced. You got married because you think that this thing's going to work out. 7.3 billion people in the world. And you go, you know what? This one, I'm going with this one. And then we fall in love fast. Like we fall in love fast, but we fall out of love pretty slowly. And you know, there's a line in the Bonfire of the Vanities, the Tom Wolfe book, where one of the characters is talking to another and he says, how did you go bankrupt? And he says, I went bankrupt the same way everybody does, very slowly and then all at once. And when the answer to that question is how do marriages end? They end very slowly and then all at once. So, yeah, you're getting divorced because he was sleeping with his secretary. But that's not why you're getting divorced. You're getting divorced because you had a connection. And at some point, that connection started to fall apart. And I'm not suggesting it's one person's fault or the other person's fault or maybe both people's fault or maybe it's no one's fault. Like the truth's at the bottom of a bottomless pit. But the reality is you lose those connections very slowly. And then at some point, there's all at once. It just goes off the cliff. And that's where I think people can course correct. And that's why it's sort of, you know, it's unlikely that a divorce lawyer be giving relationship advice. But the truth is, who knows better about
who knows better
breakdown than a mechanic, right?
Yes.
They see broken cars and they'll tell you, yeah, this is where they start to fall apart.
Yes.
And I see from, this is not theory. This is not hypotheticals from a therapist. This is, I sit with divorcing people all day long. I'm doing the post-mortem. I'm the guy, I'm the mortician. You know, I'm doing the autopsy on this marriage. And what you see is it's these little disconnections. And that's the stuff that we have to figure out a way. If we want our relationships to last and endure, we have to maintain those little connections. And a lot of what I talk about are just the small ways to maintain connection. Look, we all know it is way easier if you're in good shape to stay in good shape than it is to gain a ton of weight than try to lose a ton of weight and gain a ton of weight than try to lose a ton of weight. It is so much easier if you're happy and in a good relationship to keep it happy, to do preventative maintenance. My sister's a dentist and she always says to me, if you come to me with a toothache, it's too late. There's so many things I could have done If you came to me before your tooth hurt, but by the time the tooth hurts, it's too late. And that's why my book is called, If You're in My Office, It's Already Too Late. Like, don't come to my, the way to stay out of my office is by coming up with these small, and I think surprisingly simple, ways to stay connected to your partner and to keep connection and intimacy with your partner in a way that, that it's going to feed itself and it's going to stay strong and healthy.
Whew, you are just a font, my friend. Of, I mean, I
thought, talk, so you know.
I was going to say, I thought it's it began and end with musicology, but it goes so much further.
It starts there. Yeah.
Well, let's give some people some free advice, if you don't mind, because they have questions, and trust me when I say, if one person has this question, everybody has this question.
Amen.
Let's see. This is from, we'll just say Gentry. My wife and I are getting divorced because she cheated on me and gave some of my money to the guy she cheated with. Well, we have two out of three things you just said, but I live in what is called a no-fault state. Do I have to give half even if she cheated on me and I feel like she basically stole money from me?
Wow. So there's a lot to unpack there. So the first thing that, that I have to tell this person, which is hard to tell people, is that there is no good spouse bonus and there is no bad spouse penalty. Mm. So if your spouse is divorcing you because you left the cap off the toothpaste, or if they're divorcing you because you slept with the entire Knicks starting lineup, they still get 50% of your assets. Child support is still done by a formula. Like, it's just not relevant. And that's really hard for people to hear because they come in and they're like, hey, this one cheated and I didn't. I was a good spouse. And you go, right. Okay. But like 50% is still 50%.
So is that every state? Is every state a no-fault state?
The majority of states, fault is not tied to equitable distribution, except in extreme circumstances, what's called egregious marital fault. And if I told you some of the things that don't meet the egregious marital fault standard, you would go, wow, like that is like sleeping with someone's sister who you're married to is not egregious marital fault. Like the list of things that are not egregious marital fault is shocking. So, you know, that's one piece. The other piece of that question is it shows a fundamental misunderstanding of, because you use the term my money. She gave him some of my money.
Yes.
There's no such thing as my money if I'm married. If you buy your spouse a Rolex watch for their birthday, you bought yourself one half of a Rolex watch. You are one person in the eyes of the law. So if you have money that you have earned during the marriage, your spouse earned one half of that money. Now, in terms of money being given to a mistress or to a paramour, there is something called, you know, wasteful dissipation of marital assets. You can come in, and I've had a lot of clients who've been successful coming in and saying, hey, what was this purchase at Tiffany's? What was this hotel that you stayed at? And you can get 50% of that back. Because remember, half of it was their own money that they're spending.
So wait, mm-hmm. Sorry. Just to be clear, if this happened, like, let's say Soprano style, then I just bought a quarter of the Gumar's ring?
Yes, theoretically.
Oh, come
on. And that's where you can go in and make a claim for wasteful dissipation of marital assets. And you can say, look, I want half of that back. So not 100% of it back. Right. If he spent $1,000 on it, $500 you're entitled to get back because $500 was his money to spend.
Right.
But the other thing you can do too is also transfers in contemplation of divorce are looked at very carefully. So if this is right before the parties are splitting up that this is happening, people, the behavior they engage in financially right before a divorce action is looked at very closely. So that's another way to look at it. But again, there's so much there to unpack. But the hard news that most people need
to hear headline
is, look, like you're not going to go in and there's this image that a judge is going to sit there and go, I've heard enough. This painted Jezebel is not getting anything. You know, how dare she? It doesn't work that way. It's not, you know, the judges aren't that interested in who you're sleeping with. And it's really not something that gets into the meat and potatoes of things.
That's your answer. Sorry, Gentry.
Sorry, Gentry.
This next question comes from @BaldBrian, the host of the show. I'm going to put you on the spot, James, because now you mentioned these sort of theatrical things that don't happen. What movies have gotten these proceedings correct? You're depicting these divorces, custody battles.
Yeah, it's a, you know, here's what I'll say. Most don't get it right.
I figured.
Kramer versus Kramer was one of the first ones that I think historically did a pretty good job of showing how painful for people it can be to go through a custody proceeding and how your life is scrutinized and how open book all of your transgressions can be weaponized. You know, any one of us who's in a relationship or any of us who have children, if I judge you by your worst moment of parenting, then you're a terrible parent. Like, we've all had a moment in our parenting where we lost our patience or we said something we shouldn't have said. But I'd like to believe that we're not judged by that. Just like we're not as good as our best moment in parenting. We're the average of all of it, maybe. So I think that's, they did it well. I actually think the show on HBO, Divorce, I think it was, with Sarah Jessica Parker. And
I didn't watch it. I heard it was great.
Yeah, I have to tell you, a lot of people missed it. What they did a great job of was showing how two very rational people who want to split up in an evolved way can slowly and unintentionally start to weaponize against each other because of the people around them, the lawyers around them, and the system itself. And the way that people like miscommunicate when they're learning to co-parent separately. So they did a good job of that. And I have to say, A Marriage Story,
I was just thinking,
you know, I think did a phenomenal job. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of buzz among the attorneys of the world that the character that was played by Laura Dern was based on Laura Wasser, who I know is a phenomenal divorce lawyer in California. And we've had the pleasure of meeting a few times, not in a courtroom, but she's a great lawyer. And I think it demonstrated the reality of, you know, when you have like the Bob, the real estate lawyer who you're friends with, up against a skilled, seasoned divorce lawyer, and how that's just not a fair fight. Mm-hmm. Like, you're bringing a knife to a gunfight, and how when you bring the Ray Liotta character, you bring the skilled, you know, divorce lawyer against the skilled divorce lawyer, that sometimes it turns into a battle of will between professionals, mm-hmm. as opposed to doing what really seasoned professionals do, which is focus on their client's interests. Which, by the way, my experience of Laura is that that's what she does. She focuses on her client's interest. She's not the kind of person who, you know, amps up the conflict unnecessarily. The best divorce lawyers, the ones who have good reputations, you know, we can be, you know, I've been described as a compassionate advocate, and I've also been described as the sociopath you want on your side and the courtroom gunslinger. And I'm both of those things are probably true, because a good divorce lawyer has a full toolbox. There's a part of us that can be very conciliation minded, reasonable, mediation minded, and a side of us that's a weapon, you know, that you point at someone, and our job is to go and do what's got to be done. So
I often wonder.
Absolutely.
That's what everyone says. And by the way, my husband will tell you, the worst depiction of divorce in the history of cinema, Mrs. Doubtfire. You don't just take someone's kids away and give them limited visitation because you've got a divorce.
The list of bad ones is like much, much longer.
Yeah.
It's just like, if you ask Garagos, like, which TV show or movie gets criminal defense law wrong? Oh. The answer is like all of them, except maybe a few parts of Law and Order.
Right.
You know, there really is so little that's because the truth is, and it's not that actual courtroom drama is not visually compelling enough. Like, courtroom work is very compelling, but there's just something about, you know, when they try to do something with Hollywood, you want to have real clear good guys, real clear bad guys. And that's not always how it works. Human emotional complexity is at work in a marriage. And it's really, elephants don't marry zebras most of the time. You know, you have two people, they're flawed, they're human, and they both made mistakes, and they both probably could have done better. And it's really not a matter of villains and heroes. It's really a matter of trying to figure out, you know, the gray area.
Do you hate other divorce lawyers?
No. I mean, I don't like go out to dinner with them, but I think it's because I spend so much time with them during the day. No, I don't hate other divorce lawyers. I think we can relate to each other's problems better than most. There are some divorce lawyers I hate, for sure.
Are there any that you're friends with or friendly with that you've had to go up against each other?
Oh, constantly. Yeah. I spend most of my time like trying to kill people who I'm good friends with. But that's not different for me. I was a fighter for many years. I trained Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a long time. And I'm somebody who is very used to getting punched in the face by people I love. So I'm punching people I love in the face or trying to break their arms. So it's not weird to me to go in. I've actually had it be, I have an adversary who I'm in court a lot with. We've been on opposite side of cases very often for many years, and we're both good trial lawyers. So when we go at each other, you can actually see people like, oh, who's in there? Okay, let's go sit and watch that one. And we've got at each other. We go so hard in the paint against each other that once the judge, when a conference finished, said, I want everyone to leave except counsel. I want to talk to the two of you. And he says, counselors, I thought the two of you were friends. And he and I both looked at each other like, yeah, what, why? Yeah. And he was like, oh my God, I thought you were going to jump over the table and throttle each other. And I said, oh no, that was just like the show. You just, you know, we're good. Like and sometimes we'll call each other, like we'll leave the courthouse call each other and be like, oh my God, you got me so good on that one. Like, I can't believe you did. And there is a sort of, it's like, I find that very touching though. I have to tell you, like when I watch a boxing match, I've always been a boxing fan. There's something about at the end of the fight, when the two guys hug each other,
yeah.
I just find that so moving because, you know, they're there to beat the crap out of each other, but no one in that room except those two people knows what the other one has been through. Like they both trained so hard. They both went through so much suffering and they can relate to each other better than anybody. So divorce lawyers, we should have that camaraderie. And by the way, we can leverage that camaraderie in our clients' favor. Because good, experienced divorce lawyers who I've beat the crap out of and they beat the crap out of me in cases and we've won and lost against each other. When we call each other, there's a shorthand of being able to say like, all right, listen, man, you're going to say this and I'm going to say this. And, blah, 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 and then you know this judge, he's going to say this. So why don't we just get there? And we just can get a case done in a way that, you know, when you don't know someone and they just want to posture and puff and cock and they try to play tough. And you kind of have to, okay, now we got to do the whole show.
Do the dance, yeah.
Right. That's not productive. But even the funniest part of that is your clients very often, like they hate the other lawyer, right? Because this is just like, you know, like so the stuff comes out of my mouth sometimes, like the others, they're sitting there going, oh my God, I hate that guy. And so sometimes we realize like we can't be too chummy in front of the clients.
No.
And even sometimes we'll say like, all right, listen, when we walk out of this conference room, like we really got to look like we hate each other. And then we'll walk out and like really do the like, you know what? Why don't you knock it? Yeah, you get over yourself. And we walk away and the client, oh, what did he say? That was great. You know, you guys are really upset. And they like that.
Sure. Don't worry. I took care of it.
Yeah, it's a show. It's really not productive to hate your adversary or to have that animosity carry over. It's not useful. It's not productive stuff. And, you know, it's really not it's not personal. You know, I was coming out of a Starbucks a couple of months ago. And, you know, when you're standing there and you're waiting for your drink, you know, and you're waiting for them to call your name. And so I'm just standing there. I'm waiting for James J., you know. So and there's a guy staring at me like they're just staring, you know, like mean mugging me. And meanwhile, I think like, oh, maybe he's like, I don't know, one of my kids' teachers or something. Uh-huh. Or maybe I know him from, because I don't remember people's names. And, you know, so he's just staring at me. So I go like, you know, hey, how you doing? Like kind of wave. And he just doesn't even move. He's just staring at me. So I'm like, okay, maybe he's not looking at me and I'm just missing something. So I walk out in the parking lot and he follows me out and he comes up to me and he says, he goes, hey, Sexton. So I turn around. I'm like, yeah, you know, he goes, you got a lot of nerve trying to wave at me. And I said, I'm sorry. Do I know you? And he said, you took my kids from me. Oh, and I said, I'm sorry. I said, what's your name? And he tells me his name. And I said, when was this? And he said, oh, you know, whatever, 2012. And I said, look, I don't know if this is going to make you feel better or worse. I'm like, I don't even remember your name. I don't remember your wife. I don't remember anything. This is a job. I said, this is a job I do, man. I said, if you'd come into my office 15 minutes before your ex-wife, I'd have been fighting for you instead of for her. I said, this isn't personal. He's like, I ought to knock your teeth out right here. And I said, you know what, man? I said, I got to tell you something. I said, if punching me is going to make you feel better, I said, I'll let you have a, go ahead. You can have a punch at me if you want to. I said, I've been punched. I said, you can punch me if you want to. If you think it's going to make you feel better, you can punch me. I said, because I have to tell you something, sir. I don't know anything about you. I know I never meant to hurt you. I have a job to do. I did my job and it sounds like I did it well. I said, I'm sorry that things didn't work out for you. I hope you're well in life. I know nothing about you. I don't remember your name. I don't remember your wife's name. I guess it was enough that he put his hand out, shook my hand, and I said, I wish you well. And he went back in, and that was it. And I've seen him a few times since, actually, and now he waves at me. So,
wow.
Diffuse the situation.
So you have zero fear of confrontation because you get punched in the face verbally and physically.
Yeah, I joke all the time that all of my hobbies and all of my time is spent, you know, like it's why I'm so mellow in real life. Like my son's – constantly say to me, they're 24 and 27. And they say to me all the time, like they'll try to argue with me. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't argue unless you've paid. Like I can't argue in my free time. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I don't know why all of my pursuits involve conflict, you know, yeah. And they involve, you know, this very intense thing. But I can say that in real life, I'm actually like very calm and chill. It sounds like
therapeutic conflict in a way.
Well, it's not blind conflict for no reason.
Right.
It's a struggle, right?
Right.
And struggle to me is beautiful. It's a creative process. Like struggle is how we sculpt things, right? So like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I always loved because it's, you know, we all walk around in this world, especially now that, you know, social media and everyone's so curated in their presentation of their life, which very rarely actually reflects reality. Like you're seeing everyone's greatest hits and you're living your own gag reel.
Right.
And I think that because of that, like we can walk around just kind of full of crap a lot of the time, you know? And I love jiu-jitsu, for example, because you can't pretend you're good at it. If you will, you're going to get tapped out. You're going to get beat up. So you either are good at it or you're not. And you have to confront your limits, you know, very often. And courtrooms are the same thing. Like you can't just be full of it. You know, the truth tends to come out sometimes despite my best efforts. And so you really, I like the struggle and the confrontation that comes with looking at hard truths and building something from that. I really think that the divorce, just like, you know, conflict is the clay. Like we can build from conflict a lot. We can learn a lot about ourselves, about the other person, the character of who we are. You know, I don't think you really know a thing until you push it to its limits. And then its true nature emerges, you know? Mm-hmm. And so whether it's fighting in a ring or whether it's, you know, fighting in a courtroom, I like the sort of the molding fire that comes from conflict. And I think it can be very helpful to all of us.
Well put.
This has blown my mind.
Oh, wow.
Like all of it. Seriously. I get the feeling.
You didn't even tell your husband you spent the afternoon with a divorce lawyer. He'll be on his best behavior.
Oh, my God.
He will be
incensed.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell with you that as much knowledge and truth bombs as you've dropped on us, there's plenty more where that came from. So I'm telling you, we are not done with you.
Listen, I am here anytime. I've been a fan a long time and I'm thrilled to be here and I'm happy to come back anytime.
Well, thanks.
Thank you so much. And just to remind people, the book, if you're in my office, it's already too late. A Divorce Lawyer's Guide to Staying Together. That's available, you know, Amazon.
It's everywhere. You know, if you want to listen to me talk for 8.5 hours, you can get it on Audible. You know, I that's a long time to listen to me, though. So I don't, you know, it actually sells well on Audible because I think people don't want to be seen carrying it around.
Right. Yes, you know? Exactly.
Yeah. My publisher said to me, they're like, you know, your audiobook sales are through the roof. They're like, but you know, the hardcover and the paperback hasn't really. And I said, well, what do you think that is? And they said, well, who the hell's going to, but you know, that's a funny thing I have to tell you, because if you came to my home and you saw the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, or you saw The Power of Habit by Doring, right, or any of those books, you would go, wow, look at Jim, man. He's successful. He's good at what he does, but he's always trying to sharpen the point of the sword. Like he's always still trying to get the best. You see a book about how to keep your relationship strong. And you go, oh, shit, what's going on with Jim? You know, like, say like, oh, wow. Yeah. This guy like wants to make his relationship be successful and work. So I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure why it's not okay to say, hey, I want to keep my relationship sharp. I want to learn about how to do that better. So, but yes, it's on Audible. It's on Amazon. It's all over the place. It's in your local bookstore.
Oh, that's perfect. And if you're wanting to get in touch through social media, NYC Divorce Law and Instagram.
NYC Divorce Lawyer on Instagram, yes.
On Instagram, yeah, perfect.
Thanks, James. That was illuminating.
Thank you both. I hope to be back again soon.
The good news, I think, if anyone made it this far, they're fine with the sound of your voice. So they're going to get the audio.
Well, they got to do another 7.5 hours. I know. They got to see. It might be my first hour's as good as it gets.
And we have plenty of more listener questions that we promise we will have James back on to answer.
You got it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, James. Yes.
Thank you for listening to The Brian and Gina Show. To get in touch with the hosts or buy their books, hit them up at @baldbrian and @GinaGrad on Twitter and Instagram, or by email at podcasts@lamag.com. To get connected with LA Magazine, hit them up at @LAMag on Twitter and Instagram. Talk soon.